In other words, you're a proficient student. The committee takes on the various issues before us now, so often, including the department. Now, before the National Assembly, I will have to go and collect the mistakes so that it doesn't look bad. I should have first maybe phoned the committee secretary to get my facts. But I'm still happy that the committee, in my absence, adopted civil systems proposal for the sake of all of us. We will now have to make way the means of ensuring that it receives the attention it deserves before the assembly, and that we push it in the direction that we want to go to. Because there is a tendency in this parliament sometimes to put a thing on the other people or whatever and allow it to deliver a fill-up. So we have to be, you know the parliamentary system better than I do, so we'll have to be on guard that that trick is not applied on that proposal, that it should just be put there until it is lapsed at the end of this parliamentary term. And I will ask committee members to keep on nagging me to follow it through. Because so many people will be, all of us will be disadvantaged if that is allowed to pull up before parliament. I know that too. Okay. Now, the other thing is, before I go to Mr. C's proposal and Mr. Lowe's one, I received correspondence here from some people who reside in Acorn Brook. That's around. Okay. It's a petition, but I think it was meant for the speaker. It's signed. It's alleging a corruption in awarding of houses in that Ward 20 of Acorn Brook. I took the liberty of advising the writer to redirect it to the speaker. Because it's not the nature of the issue that we deal with. Because those ones that we deal with are the ones that are sponsored by the speaker. So I just wanted to inform you that I took the liberty to redirect. Now, Mr. Speed one, we are there now. The Employment Equity Act. The Department of Labor did not support the proposal, and I see men here from the representing the minister. I don't want to come in and do what the committee view and thinking was, but maybe for 2-3 minutes we must open for a recap to refresh everybody's memory of what was the position from the committee, if any, or to take and discuss it. But I don't want to put you under the. Sorry, will you be able to reiterate in one or two sentences for us the views of the department? Do you still remember? Or should I ask the committee secretary?
I think she has to ask the committee
secretary. Okay, I'll see you in 5 minutes. Okay, then. Just take us through what the views of the department were in not supporting this issue, and then I'll open for members to take their minds on in the next time.
I think with regards to the argument of the department, they highlighted the shortcomings of the implementation of affirmative action, that it was not being adequately addressed. And then there was still a lot of inequalities of the government. They also, regarding the equity target that was set by the Department of Labor, they are still far from achieving that. So under those cases, they did not necessarily support conduct.
Okay. Thanks. Now, notwithstanding the discussions that took place in the committee the last time we met, I would like to give this chance to members of the committee to express their views on this issue before I express my own views. It's open for committee members to either reiterate the positions we took or to reiterate a briefing of the issue to state what your take is.
Chair, thank you very much. I support the position of the department. Yes, this is not a permanent arrangement. It will not be with us for all time. There are certain purposes behind this legislation of affirmative action. Those have not been met. We've just been reminded that the equity targets in the country have not been met. And until that happens, Chair, I really believe that we need this legislation. If you just look, I don't have facts and figures before me, but by far, the easiest employable people still remain whites. By far, the least number of unemployed people are whites. I mean by far, you know, 40, 50, 60%. Equally, by far, the people who are unemployed remain black people. So we cannot have that kind of situation in our country. And this legislation designed to meet those challenges, we have not yet met. I dispute the efforts. I don't want to go through a whole document from the Freedom Front Plus, but the point that's repeatedly mentioned in these debates, and the DA has used this, is that white school leavers are leaving the country because they can't find employment. There's no scientific base to that. But anyway, it's not only whites leaving the country, it's others leaving the country for a variety of reasons. So, Chair, given all of this, and given the very, I thought, very comprehensive input from the department, I certainly would not want to support this legislation. Far, far, far too soon. Instead, all of us, including other parties, must work to make affirmative action work. Put our hearts and minds behind it, understand the purpose, and make it work. That's it.
Any other statements?
I could respond to you.
When we take decisions, we don't entertain any other input. Sorry.
Chair, we spent time deliberating all these things. I understood that we are here today after those things to take decisions on that sector. We're going to start opening the whole thing now for debate on all four of these proposals. We are not going to even be able to get through one of them. Then we're going to sit in the same situation that we've been for the last so many months. We've been meeting, we can't move forward. I understand you were not here, and that's fine. And Mr. Anderson said what he wants. I'm not about to repeat what I've said before, but I even said in a similar proposal that we spent some time ago, I made my points, my party's position on this. So I'm not going to repeat things I've said again. Maybe on some of the others, on some remarks.
You're putting me in a difficult position. You want me to? I don't want to direct the decision from the chair, but maybe you want me to say that Mr. Ensley suffices, and then we close this debate. Then you will say again I'm autocratic from the chair. But having read what the committee's thinking is, I can safely conclude that the committee is of the view that we must not accept this proposal. That's what I was trying to avoid, but I'll do that from the chair.
Sure, I was just making reference to the discussion that we should not start the whole discussion deliberation again. The decision is still something that will be put before us, and we will say A or nay or whatever the case may be on that set. Mm. But all I'm saying, I'm not going to repeat what I've said before. This is probably a waste of time.
No, it's okay. From as I told you, I took the liberty of reading the minutes and I've got a feeling that the committee is of the view that we should not accept this. Is that correct? Yes. So you are agreeing with Mr. Ainsley and that's the position we are taking. We have just decided not to adopt, what is the right legal thing? Not to give permission to proceed for the proposal. End of it.
Sir?
So?
All I said is I will not participate in restating my views. That doesn't mean to say that I'm immediately saying that Machine State is final. All that I'm supporting this proposal in its current form or whatever the case may be.
You want me to say all of you must vote individually?
No, Chair. Let me just then say in this case, I can't allow you to move forward and say it's a unanimous decision that this whole thing is undesirable. I'm not saying I necessarily oppose it, I support it in its present form as it is, but the notion, the whole thing, and I made myself clear in reality, you've said with a previous proposal in this regard. And I still have to retain that view.
No, it doesn't matter. If the majority of this committee say that we must not proceed, that is what we're going to reflect. The committee. No, I never used the word unanimous.
I'm not saying it.
Okay. We're proceeding to the next one, Mr. Lowe's one, Labor Relations Act. Anybody wants to lead us towards a decision? The department also did not support this proposal because the argument from what I read was that this is covered under common law, that in terms of the prescription of ILO. Yes. If we say yes to this, we could be read to mean that we are interfering with the right to strike and to do all those things. But anybody whose property gets damaged or who suffers losses when there is a strike, under common law, they are entitled to sue whoever was the organizer, even if it's
compensation.
Yes, even from the very organizers, even if they are organized labor. Now, I just want to remind members that also we are supposed to check before we propose legislation. We are supposed to check whether what we are trying to propose.
I'm staging a walkout now.
I see you. Thank you. Bye bye. At least you're doing so with a smile. That when members propose, they must make sure that what they are trying to propose is not covered anywhere else in the law. So I tend to agree with the Department of Labor here, and I tend to think that was also the thinking of the committee, not unless I did not read properly or I did not understand what I read properly. Mania?
So this whole thing goes about who has to prove what when it comes to these claims. It's not a matter of impinging on the right of strikers or the ILO, although it can very well be interpreted in that way. I do understand that. The whole idea is to create something that will place some presumption of accountability on the part of the organizer strike in such a way as to try and force them in a way to be more careful. We all know what happened with the private security strike. Now, I understand the problems that the department says, and I also understand the possible interpretation in terms of this document as it is at the moment, but the principle that maybe it is time that we give thought to how do we deal with these legitimate strikes. And people always have the right to do these things. But how do we deal with the people who organize it in terms to ensure them, or to ensure that they safeguard the innocent public and their property? Now, in that instance, I do deem this proposal desirable. And you must bear in mind, when we talk about the Bible, we don't talk about the thing as it is in full detail. We talk about the idea, the principle of what's lacuna in our law, or what may be the case. Now, the problem is if you use the common law to try and get compensation, then the burden of proof is all on the plaintiff. And you do know that makes it almost impossible to deal with these things. Now, I don't know how to deal with this in this committee, because I do think it is time that, and it's not our job as a committee, I do think it is time that either the Portfolio Committee on Labour or somebody sits down and consider ways and means through either regulations or legislation to ensure that there's a greater burden of care on the organisers of such actions without in any way infringing on their right to strike or to hold protest rallies and things. And that's it. You understand what I'm saying? So that's my problem with this. So it is, I think it's desirable that we should look at that. I do not know if this would be the vehicle to get it passed us to the speaker to be tabled at the portfolio committee and then ensure that they start that thought process. That's on one side. The other side, we also know that in terms of time, that will not happen in this term. And that will also mean that even if we deem this desirable to move forward, it will lapse. So that's the other problem as well, what we're sitting here all for these pieces today. We do know that none of these four will probably be able to, even if it's quite desirable, will be able to go through Parliament and finish the position before Parliament closes for the election, and then they will lapse. So that's another thing. But that is my feeling about this. It is time that we need, and it's not impinging in any way, impinging on the rights of people to strike. I fully support that, and all of us support that. But we need to put a burden of care on the people who organise this.
Notice Mr. Rajbali and Mr.
Mekhar
in that order. Thank you,
Mr. Chairperson, coming from a background of 40 years in the trade union, I don't think we can actually support this. The reason being that damages could be caused by outside people as well and not the strikers. And yet, if we have to pass this in the union, bears the brunt of the whole thing, that damages caused during the strike. An outsider can come and do damages to Chairperson, and we cannot actually take this and blame it onto the strikers or to the union. So I feel that we shouldn't be accepting it.
Okay. Let me just pose a question. I'll take Mr. Nathan back. Maybe I should take Mr. Nathan and pose the question.
Madam Chair, I accept the principle that common law is covering this particular aspect. And though one feels perhaps inclined to be sympathetic towards the draft legislation, I think we must be guided by the common law principle that we have, that we don't try and override that. But having said that, I think that for instance, places like Solgar or any of these, which has nothing to do with us, I think perhaps a message could go out that you raise the deposits that are being required. I'm just giving a practical example. Force people to go on strike, and that in itself will not affect the marchers, but it will tend to have the organizers, which will bear the brunt of it in terms of that type of thing, to look at it. But as I say, that is not at all relevant towards our discussion. That is another way that could be
I wanted to pose a question. I agree with Mr. Swart that there is a need to deal with this issue of increasing the burden of care on the burden of care on the organizers. And it's not only labor organizations that are organizing matters. Political parties do, COSAS does. You remember Malema led a very violent school march in Gauteng. And now if we only blame one sector and the law will be punitive towards one sector, and if I'm a women's organization, I organize a mass. That's my problem of locating this problem within the labor relations. But yet, I think there is. Yes, but I think there is merit in wanting to hold the organizers more responsible. And the question now is, because we do have leeway as a committee to make recommendations, what kind of recommendations are we going to make? I think that's where the problem is. That we can still say it's not desirable to locate this within Labor Relations Act. However, we propose to send it, Mrs. Mann.
I think, Madam Chair, that would also address Mrs. Rabai's problem. Mm. Because if the organizer of a march are responsible, they will have enough marshals and make absolutely sure that any kind of attachment they acquire on their march will be repelled by them. So I think this is the kind of train of thought that I like. responsibility of anyone who organizes a march, and it must be emphasized to them that they must have enough marshals to ensure that unauthorized people do not cause mayhem around the march.
Thank you very much. I'll take Mr. Clark and Mr. Ainsley.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I fully agree what you're saying. It needs to be much broader than this. That's why I said. That's why I said in this can form the whole idea. We're actually talking about any public event organised by anybody. Now, let me just make two points, if you allow me, Chair. First of all, we are not trying to change or supersede the common law, and that will never happen. Because the common law right to claim for compensation. We're talking about a dispensation adding on to that, which only has to do with the burden of proof. And it's the following. Let me explain this. Ms. Ainsley sat in Parliament the afternoon of the private security industry strike. His car is parked out in Rulon Street. He gets back to his car, the whole car is smashed. Now he must start, he doesn't know who did it, he doesn't know, all he knows, the strike went past. There are some video footage by police or by CCTV that indicate there's some of these marches, or people attached themselves to this march, and they, with kiris and stones and whatever, they damage his car. Now, Mr. Ainsley is sitting with the following problem. He now has to prove either who caused the damage and claim from that person, or he has to prove that this happened as part of that march, and all the proof is on him. Now, if you do go with presumption that things have took place within the auspices of this march or this public event, it's the responsibility of the organizers. It doesn't mean that now the organizers are being held to blame, as Mr. Bali would want to think. That is not the case. All it means is that the burden of proof moves. In other words, instead of Mr. Ainsley now have to prove that the person who did this was part of that march and was under the control of the organizers and those things, he just showed what happened. And now the burden to refute lies with the organizers. They must now prove that they took all the necessary actions. You know how these things. If I'm a plaintiff, I have to prove, otherwise I've got no case. But if they set the presumption, it means I need to prove certain basic things. And then the defendant has to prove why he should not be held liable. And that is the type of thing we're talking about. It's not saying, well, now because it happened, now the union or the political party or whatever, whoever is accountable. It says, now, that organizer must now come and prove that he took sufficient action, he deployed sufficient marshals, he was in control of that strike, or he has to prove that it was really a person that...
But that's what I'm saying.
This thing as it is limited, and this is the implication of this, and the proposer explained it to us under my... I mean, I draw it out of him actually, because I know that's what the intention, but he's not a lawyer, so he couldn't say it in the proper way. But those are the type of things that we need to... And that's why I said I do not know if this can be a vehicle for us to express and set in motion a chain of events that may lead to something that will bring that about. Or if, just as members of Parliament, we should do something else. Maybe in the report, if we decide not to continue with this, in this form, then we should say, well, because of its limited scope and singling out trade unions, this... We are not saying this should move forward, but however, the principle and these things, and then we maybe should ask the speaker to refer this whole thing with our report to somebody in Parliament that can start looking at these things. But I talk about all inclusive.
Mr. Ainsley,
and
Mr. Ainsley,
Mr.
Mabot.
I want to support Mr. Raj Bali that we reject this proposal. And an appeal to this committee for us to deal with this proposal. Not the suggestions the Chair has made, not the suggestions Mr. Decker has made, not the suggestions Advocate Swart has made. We haven't given sufficient time to consider the effect of the burden extending liability. We have not given time sufficient time to consider that matter. Therefore, I would not like to see that to go into a report. But I think we must restrict ourselves to this particular proposal. This proposal does not talk about the burden issue. Go through 3 or 4 pages, not there. So it doesn't deal with those issues we are now discussing. It doesn't deal with it. Let us then, I want to use Mr. Advocate Swart's approach to the earlier discussion. Let us simply come here and I'll deal with this proposal. We have discussed this before. Don't open the debate. We're now opening the debate. And Mr. Advocate Swart opposed that in the earlier discussion. I'm using his words to say let us not open the debate. There is on the table, based on what Mr. George Bully has said, that the common law, that Criminal Procedure Act covers these matters, international law covers these matters, that the City of Cape Town, I believe, successfully prosecuted certain individuals during the security strike, successfully took action against them. Given all of that, I think that I'm proposing that we reject this proposal, that all these other discussions we perhaps table at another meeting.
Congregation to come together. And during the church service, the woman gets raped. Are you going to blame the priest because he called the church? This is the type of logical reason that I find difficult always. Be that as it is to me, I think what I've said was that I'm supporting that. This needs to be done.
Just before I keep short for the last time, I'm okay, sir. We have previously rejected issues because we say this thing is too limited, etc., etc. So Mr. Ensley is right somewhat in that we are now finding reasons which are outside the proposal to accommodate as recommendations, and I think we are stepping outside our mandate as a committee. Mr. Swart.
Chair, two points. I want to make it very easy for you. Let's leave it as Mr. Ensley. So I will go back to the proposer or the part of the proposer and just suggest that after the election, when the new parliament is in place, to look at something maybe to bring before this committee on a broad base, looking at all these things that I actually talked about.
Yeah,
he
said
but,
that he's proposing to the speaker.
I'm sorry. But just to make a quick answer there, just
I just don't want to go away with this idea.
If a priest called a congregation, it can never be proven that he foresaw that will happen.
We're dealing with Mr. Vekram's proposal now. The issue of protection of constitutional democracy against terrorists and related activities, the issue of copper debt. I think that the committee supported this one. Theft had reservations. They did not necessarily see copper theft as a terrorist activity, terrorist-related activity. And then they were also arguing that this matter is being dealt with under the Second Hand Goods Amendment Bill. Once we hear the committee out, and especially Mr. Swart, who has the privilege of discussing other issues that are related to in other committees that he sits in. I'm not giving him necessarily special treatment, but I was trying to check this against the background of other laws that would deal with subversion, terrorism, etc. I know that the committee is strongly thinking that we must adopt this proposal. Mr. Swart and everybody else?
Sure, thank you. I think, first of all, Mr. Becker needs to inform us because this was a proposal before us, before the second-hand goods bill came through Parliament and was passed. So I think he should inform us if he thinks that took care of his concerns. I do not think so because in that bill, the specific offence, I don't think is seriously enough dealt with. Now, I understand the police may say they don't see this as a terrorist activity. Anything that, and we're not talking about a copper cable outside on a pavement or something, we talk about what this causes. This causes businesses, big parts of this country, to be without communications. And that is indeed, I think, in a broader sense, can be classified as a definition of terrorism, at least suppose that. So if Mr. Bakker is satisfied that this specific offence and its consequences are not sufficiently covered in a serious enough light in the Secondhand Goods Act, then I would support that this move forward.
I think Mr. Schwartz has summarized correctly. The Secondhand Goods Bill is a broad bill, taking into consideration all used items that have been. It's not specific and it doesn't lift out specific aspects. I have, at that hearing, I have asked the officer that presented the position from SAPS if he could supply us with the success rate in terms of the Secondhand Goods Bill, in terms of what is being achieved by it, particularly with regard to copper theft. He at that stage said it is so recently being introduced that they don't have full records, but then he also, at a certain stage, or after the meeting, and he said that there is mixed feelings from the police side about it. It is what they specifically had about was that the terrorist side of it, it might be that in future that government would like to do away with the terrorism type of thing, and then it would be unnecessary terrorism as a blank type of thing. But he couldn't give any real answers towards that. That is with regard to that particular aspect. I can only say that in terms of, I don't think it should be restricted in the long run, only towards this legislation. I believe that this legislation could pave the way. If I could perhaps just mention the blow-up of tellers, bank tellers and that type of thing. Causing also massive disruption for the public, everything, the whole lot, could also be regarded, in my view, as terrorism act, and it is not specified in the law. So I think it can open the position that things like these could also be looked upon in the future.
Okay,
so
before I
take
you, thank you, Mr. Baker. In my mind, there is a clear distinction between terrorism and subversion. So I really wonder if we really want to classify this as subversion or as acts of terror. Because terrorism is defined as an intention to instill fear, to do all those things, etc. So I don't know. I'm just apprehensive that we will pass something that will be rejected on a technical. But that is just my thinking. I strongly agree with the fact that copper theft is an act of subversion, so is bombing of terror. But because there is so much broad definition of terrorism, I don't know if you wanted to enter that terrain of what is terror, terrorism, act of terror, I don't know. But if the committee still strongly feels that we must pass this, I would just, pull backwards from the chair. Mr. Necker, I'll give you a second bite and
Madam Chair, just as a suggestion to make it perhaps easier also to look at what you have said just now, this committee may also express that they found the legislation desirable, and then they could also, as far as I know, let the matter be referred to one or two or more of the different state departments for legislation that it be discussed by that particular committee. Let's assume the Justice Committee.
And you are a bit out of order because you are the proposer. You are now telling us how you deal with this proposal and your own proposal. For that reason, I'm going to cut you short. Mr. Any other person other than Mr. Swan, because he spoke on this matter before? Mr. Ensley?
No,
I'll go back to
the. No, but you see, in our informal discussions, he didn't have a quorum. He agreed with the principles behind it.
Mm.
But there were definitely those kinds of questions.
Mm.
which you are asking. Is it terrorism? Is it sabotage? What is it? Economic sabotage? What? Because terrorism, I thought that part of the definition was it would have a political goal, terrorism. Generally, that's what I thought. And that this kind of theft doesn't have that as a sort of goal. So some concern was expressed that possibly that didn't quite fit into that definition. But the principle of really coming down hard on these people, that was generally agreed at our committee. And so maybe it is, although you cut Mr. Decker short, maybe the approach you outlined earlier on, which we rejected, may be applicable to this particular proposal. That you say, yes, we've considered it right in this step, and we, in principle, support this kind of legislation, ensuring that definitions are correct, and ensuring it doesn't infringe on any other law, whatever. But the principle will be behind the principle. We support the principle.
You see, definition of terrorism, it's, as you're saying, it's in the intention.
Yeah.
Whereas we are basing our argument on the effects. That the effects culminate into lack of communication, which is tantamount to sabotage, etc. I would propose from the chair that because we are meeting in November, between myself and Mr. Becker and the other role player, we sit and look whether we should ask Mr. Becker to change a few things to look so that it looks we realize this intention to punish these people severely without moving into the territory that, you know, locating it appropriately. Is it a terrorism act or is it something? Can we put it in abeyance until the next meeting in November? And then myself, Mr. Becker, and Mr. whoever is, and the staff, we look into this thing and then clean it up so that when we adopt it, we're really sure that we... Mr. Becker, is that okay?
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. Expansion of criminal records. Should I leave from the chair or are you guys raising your hands? We got strong views on this. I think that we should not push this thing through because whereas on the briefing note that he, Mr. Feld had put before the committee, he specifically quoted the Mixed Marriages Act as well as the curfew, whatever, for the trans guy, Immorality Act. However, if you went back to read the proposal, it says any apartheid law, ordinance, etc., etc. For me, that's any. It's making me fearful because under apartheid, people who had killed and were found guilty of killing, I don't think we must expand their criminal record. People who had raped and have a criminal record for those acts, we should not expand those records. So I found it tricky because if you listen to the speaking notes, you automatically immediately agree. But the proposal is rather too broad. It says any apartheid law, ordinance, whatever, whatever. I read it and I read it again this morning. Can you show me the proposal? This proposal. I've noticed you, Mr. I have the speaking notes against the actual proposal. I'll take you through the proposal itself. Particulars of proposed legislation bill definition. Apartheid law means any law, act, ordinance, regulations, decree, or bylaw enacted prior to 27 April 1994, or the former in South Africa, or by South Africa, or the former transcribed Botswana vendor. So that's too broad a scope.
Just read the rest of the sentence, please.
Which created an offense which would not have been an offense in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equity, and freedom.
That means, Chair, that if there's
rape, murder, anything that would have been an offence in an open democracy society would not be part of this. You understand? It says any law that created an offence which would not have been an offence in an open and democracy. In other words,
but what is the mechanism that we are going to use to find out which law specifically? It's a trial order.
Okay.
It's a trial order. It's a blanket check which we cannot afford to give. Too broad. So for all that basis, I strongly argue that we should not pass this thing. It's dangerous. What is the committee's view?
Unfortunately, time is running out, and we only got about a few minutes. I feel that this proposal that has come to us should be relooked at, because it is not easy to just pass a bill and say people with criminal record in there from their apartment that they be pardoned. Because there is the families of the victims as well, those who have been actually injured or whatever it was, that one has to look at to say, what are their feelings in respect of pardoning these people? So I think we should just leave this over and have a re-look at it and see what we come up with.
That's a second proposal.
I want to agree with Mr. Kapotin. I support the proposal that he's made, not the original made, that we can't support this. It's just too wide, too broad. We don't know what we're letting ourselves in for. As Mr. Roach Bali says, the principles are good, it's a good idea, but it's up to the proposer or anybody else to reformulate and come back to it. But as it stands now here, it's just, we are risking it. We are taking a big risk.
Thank you. We're taking just too much risk. And we must remember that we are doing this on behalf of Parliament. So on that note, I would propose, are we agreeing that we are not passing this through?
No.
Okay, thanks. Yes, sir?
I would just add a rider, and that is that it could that we, in a report, that we refer it to, you know, either the Human Rights Commission or any of those boarding to one of the parliamentary committees dealing with.
Mr. Mendo, if we are realistic, we have time limits in terms of the months within which any committee can do any reasonable work. Now, like the first one that we dealt with, if people feel strongly about this, in the beginning of the next term of parliament, people have the full right to resubmit these proposals. So, I think that what we can do, we can write to the proposers to say that they still reserve the right to retable these things, giving more specific details in the next parliament or back to the Senate.
Mr. Becker's proposal that we refer to the Human Rights Commission is a dangerous protocol.
Yeah.
What is the actual result? The Human Rights Commission will be acting on behalf of Parliament. Will give them that authority which could then clarify what you ask again.
Thank you very much. We'll see you in November.